Welcome to the Amazing Gamers podcast. I am not an amazing gamer, but I know many people who are, and I am so thrilled to have one of them with me here today. My guest is Allie, also known as Highly Ginger on social media. Would you like to do a quick introduction?
Yeah, as far as gaming goes, I've been a gamer ever since Super Nintendo came out. My dad brought it over from Japan during one of his duty stations in Okinawa, and ever since then I've been hooked.
You were on the cutting edge.
Yeah, at the time it was. It's about That's the only amazing. Time we got cutting edge too, is whenever he'd get deployed.
The Super Nintendo was such a good system. Then it was for you, it was probably what the Nintendo Entertainment System was for me, which was just video games became what I always knew they could be, and it was just magical.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll introduce myself. My name is Nathan Lamb. I'm a longtime media professional and geek and friend of RPGs and all sorts of things like that. And I recently started this podcast because I know so many amazing gamers, and it's not amazing gamers in the sense that they will beat Super Mario Bros. 3 in, 20 minutes without losing a life. It's more that they are amazing people who bring a lot of goodness to the gaming community and make it a better place by being there. And I've known many of them for years. And I just decided earlier this year I wanted to start something where I could make some time to spend some time with them, ask some of the questions I've always wanted to ask, and offer the same opportunity to them and go from there. And I want to say one thing at the start. Your profile says that you are a mom friend and a safe place to talk. I want to start the in real life proceeding by co-signing on that statement. You are a great person to talk. And I know, like, you're not the internet's therapist, but you have been a great friend to talk to over the years for me. And I'm so glad that we're getting to meet in person. This is so exciting. I'm going to start the first segment. I'll start with my favorite, which is a real talk. And this is basically something from your life recently that matters to you. And I'll start because I got one. It came this morning. So my son is getting to the age where he's now doing things where I didn't hear about it first.
Oh, like, no.
I got a play date with my best friend at the trampoline park on Sunday at 1:00. And I'm like, right on, buddy. And I think about it for a little bit. I mull it over because I don't always think the right thing. And I'm like, buddy, how'd you swing that? Because that's like the dream for you. And he's like, well, I had this pass from the last time we went and I remembered because I was there. He and his sister, the people who work at this trampoline park, were cleaning out the foam pit. And my son latched on to the project and like helped them do it. He worked with them for like half an hour.
Awesome. 40 minutes.
He is awesome. He kind of adopts people when we go places. He's very outgoing. He's very curious about people. He loves people. And yeah, he just latched on and they did it to the end. And then they came back like about 10 minutes later and they had a free pass for him. And they were like, thank you for helping us today. These free passes for next time you come. And, it's funny, that was probably before we started Scouts. But I'm like, that's a story we're going to bring to Scouts, because Scouts is about doing a good turn and helping others and sort of being there and making things better. And I loved that. And he got something good out of it without sort of any expectation whatsoever. It was just kind of like a reward for him. And now he's got a play date with his best friend on Sunday, which is like as good as it gets in his world.
Yeah.
So that's what matters to me today. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I love to open with a story like that, like about the things that really matter.
Yeah. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. And I mean, I guess furthering the mom friend thing, earlier this month, it's been about a week back home. I had went to go help my friend out. She just recently had a baby and they also moved out of state. So 6-week-old baby, house full of boxes, a 2-year-old running around, and then dad had to go to a work convention. So I went out there with Liliana, and Liliana kept Nolan very happy and entertained. And then I took care of little man and mom the best I could. And, she was able to get much needed rest. I was able to at least unpack and set up the nursery for her. And that's just a tradition I've had with friends. When my friend Riley had her baby, I went over there and was doing dishes and laundry because, you know, everybody thinks baby shower gifts should be, you know, bought, but some of the best gifts that you can give somebody is just being there for them, making sure you've got stuff to help them. Because when you come home from the hospital, you don't want to do dishes. You don't want to do laundry. You just popped out a baby. You just want to get some sleep for once in your own bed.
Yeah. That's amazing, Allie. That does not surprise me at all. And you're bringing to mind one of my theme for this show really was friendship. It's also coming of age, but friendship. I attended a lecture on Friday about the evolution that sort of points us to a good society. It was a sociologist, and I had a feeling you'd like this because you're a scientist. And he was talking about how there's things in our evolutionary past. Whenever we talk about evolutionary past, it's very focused on like tooth and claw. But there are things that are positive social traits that humans have evolved to become what we are today. And he was saying that those things are important. Technology can help emphasize those traits as well as the bad ones. And friendship was one of the things he dug into. And I'm writing about this tomorrow. So this is amazing, Allie. You are doing yet another solid for a friend by helping me sort of work through what I think of this amazing presentation. But basically, it's like, human beings have friends. We are one of the few species that does that. And, and here's a funny one, just a random aside, and I'm sorry to do this. I went to the store yesterday with my daughter, Stella. She's 4. And I was telling her about this. I said, yeah, do you want to guess, like, in addition to humans, what creatures can, you know, what animals can be friends? And Stella looks at me and goes, elephants. And I'm like, I'm like, how did you know? She's like,
she's they so just smart. Went. I love it.
She's like, they just would. Sorry, Dad. I can't explain my genius to you. It just is, you know? And I'm like, okay, I accept it. It's a magical thing. I'm so happy it's in my life. But humans are one of the few species that has friends, you know, dolphins, some primates. There's not a lot. It's not a common thing. And the thing about a friendship is that it's not, you're not anticipating an immediate reward. It's more of like, if I can help you at no great cost to my own, I will do it. And through evolution and natural selection, he tied it back to natural selection. The people who conduct themselves in that manner are the ones who thrive over time. And he gave several examples. He gave examples of people who were like shipwrecked. There was two settlements. This wasn't a scientific study, but it was a good one. Two people who were crashed on like Auckland at around the same time. And one group was every man for himself. The other group kind of recreated society, and the group that was every man for themselves, it was like 19 originally, like 3 survived. The group that formed a society, like the first thing they did was organize to save the captain who was stuck out on the boat because he was sick.
Oh, no.
The first thing they did was they organized and they rescued the captain. All 5 of them survived. And he said, look, it's not like a data double blind study or whatever. It's an anecdote. But it also beautifully illustrated a lot of other things he did have data for about how our social tendencies, including friendship, are things that have played into natural selection. And so friendship is important. He said the reason you feel good when you're with your friends is because that is evolutionary beneficial evolutionary to you. And I was just amazed. I loved this presentation. So I did have one more thing before we get, well, actually, this is into gaming, but one other way you were an amazing friend, you, when you moved, and I hope your move went smoothly and everything settled in.
You did.
Ah, that's so good. Change is hard for me. So anyone who can just sort of roll with it and do it, I salute. When you moved, you took out your Persona 4 art book and you mailed it to me. And Persona 4, one of my all-time favorite games, I got it in the mail one day. It was just an amazing thing. I love Persona 4. I love coming of age stories. I have this whole theory that everyone sees themselves in at least one of the characters from Persona 4. I see myself strongly in 3 characters from it. I really identify with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's part of what makes it such a wonderful magical game. And was that your experience as well with Persona 4? Did you identify strongly?
I would say yes, especially at the time that it came out, because I haven't really touched it since it came out. But Noto is a character that's struggling with being a female in a male-dominated society. And so at that time, I was in college trying to get a degree in biotechnology, and I was running into situations where men would get chosen over me for positions or internships. And it's not that they really had any real merit over me. We went to the same school, did the same stuff. Gender was the only difference in that point. And there's a lot of international culture in the science world, which is beautiful, but it also can be harmful in some ways because not every culture treats women as equals. And I ran into that a lot. And so, you know, you get these internal thoughts of, well, if I just was a different body, it wouldn't matter. You know, I would be treated different. And Noto goes through that quite the extreme. We see her having already adopted male presentation to be able to do this job that she feels very passionate about. Yes. And that is a struggle when she meets her shadow self. You know, she basically has to confront, would she be happier with gender reassignment, or is she happy being her? Yeah. And the truth of the matter is, for myself and for her character at the time, yeah, I would be happy staying my way. You know, that isn't what's for me. And that would be unfair to the trans community for me to just choose to change, even though my soul doesn't feel it, kind of a thing. Yeah. And so I feel like that is a very reflective for Noto and people who are in the trans community, because they, once they've made that choice, that was in their soul. That's what they wanted the whole time. And so they had that reflection and was able to make that choice. So that's how you know that it's true to them too. It's who they are.
I love Naoto. She's one of my favorites. I love that scene where she goes and talks to the investigation team when she thinks the case is solved. And Yosuke is kind of teasing her, being like, oh, yeah, you're kind of lonely, aren't you? And he kind of saw her in that moment, that Naoto mm-hmm. is very lonely, and because she's not really being herself.
Yeah, it's hard to be yourself when you're trying so hard to fit into a puzzle piece that you think is the right one. And sometimes you make mistakes. You put on a mask to be somebody.
Yeah.
To get that acceptance. And it's not always the right mask at the time. You have to take off the mask in order to truly find your community in the process.
I think that is the message of Persona 4. Seriously, and I love that game, and it pains me how many people get it wrong. I think the point of Persona 4 is that you can be yourself and fit in. And that's what I love about it. It's a perfect coming of age story. It's not about, you can sort of be this thing, but really you have to. It's like, no, at the end, they all are being themselves. They've all figured out what they want to do. They're part of a group. They found their people. They're greater than the sum of their parts, and they fit in. And that's the people who are mad that Kanji, who is one of the people I identify incredibly yes. strongly with Kanji, the people who get mad at how Kanji looks at the end of the game. What's up?
He was finally embracing himself.
He was.
So you were seeing him in his truest form at that point.
You were the tough guy punk thing was an act. That was not who he really was. And it wasn't making him happy. It was kind of keeping everything at arm's length, because he was afraid that people would see who he really was and reject him. And that's what he says that like right at the beginning. So I wrote about Kanji, and it was one of my favorite essays I ever wrote. And I have the long scene where he talks about how there was a girl whose doll was broken, and he fixed it. And everyone started making a big deal out of it, and the girl cried, and he felt bad. So he kind of was like, I'm going to find some other role that I can be that won't cause problems, or at least won't make me feel sad. And that's what he did. And I feel like Kanji is so misunderstood, because really his whole thing is about that. And the part where the kid, he gives the kid a doll because the kid lost his doll. So he's thinking of others. And the kid said, where'd you get this? And Kanji's like, oh, I made it. And the kid's like, you're so cool. He's like, it's like, I wasn't expecting that. So no, I love Kanji. I won't go into all three, but I will say that. And I think I say it and people don't have the context of it. I was somebody who was afraid that if I put out who I really was, I would, you know, that people would reject it. Or I also identify with the Daisuke guy, who's afraid that if he does his best and fails, so he kind of holds back. Like, there's so many things that I identify with in that game. And it's funny, because when I wrote that series of articles about it, it really forced me to look closely at each story and not overanalyze it, but kind of deal with everything that was being put out there on the table. And they were better written than I gave them credit for. I didn't realize how well written they were and hopefully someday I will have time to finish that. But yeah, and the alto, when she's speaking to her shadow, there's parts of it I honestly cannot follow, but I think you're right. I think she's seriously questioning it. She's dedicated. It's a family tradition. She's wondering, you know, am I? Right. And I think as part of that, she's not enjoying it anymore in her social link. That's her social link, is that she's not enjoying it anymore.
Well, and how can you enjoy something when you can't be your authentic self? Yeah. So, you know, I've had relationships where people like the idea of me, but because they didn't fit into their box, they would try to change me to fit into that box. And sometimes I would change that mask to fit into that box. And that doesn't bring you happiness when you do that. It really doesn't. And most people, when they end up in a relationship like that, whether it's like a boyfriend, girlfriend, like platonic or romantic, you know, or even familial, you have to choose to break out of that box and find what fits you. And that's where I feel like Persona is also a bit of a found family story, because with Kanji, he's not fitting into that role, that perfect role. He puts on a new mask, a tough guy mask, to be more palatable to the public eye, because he got rejected from being himself at one point. And once he finds his found family, just like Naoto, they start accepting who they are and growing from that.
What are you playing these days? Can you tell me a little bit about what you're playing for video games these days?
So the main one I'm playing right now, just because it's travel friendly on the Switch, is the Echoes of Wisdom. And that's the newest one, where Zelda is the lead character for the first true time. Yes. You know, there's another title where I guess it was, my understanding is it was a fan-made game where she was lead and it did not go very well. But Echoes of Wisdom, it has every hallmark of the original sort of dungeon setup, and it has some, I keep wanting to say Echoes to the Past, but I don't think that's the right one. My mind's meshing them together, but it has the same visual vibe as Link's Awakening that came out on the Switch. And you run through, you do the tasks and stuff, but it's got the traditional RPG sitting of you go into a new town, they need help, and you just do the best you can to help them get what they need taken care of. So with the Zora community, when you run into them, you find out that they're the sort of marshy guys, and then there's the ocean ones, and they're fighting each other instead of getting along and making music together to pacify their sort of monster deity that's hanging out over there. So Zelda goes in and tries to sort of rekindle the friendship. And by doing so, you know, she patches the rift, both physical rift of the world and the emotional rift of that group.
I like that.
And I've been enjoying it. I'm almost done. I've got one goddess left to go through, and then it'll be most likely finding where Zink has fallen, or where Link has fallen in the rift, so Zelda can work with him, because right now they're sharing powers. Mm. When you go into the rift, you have the ability to use his sword and his shield and his bow and arrow. But you know he's in there and you just can't find him yet. You keep finding shadow versions of him that aren't the true Link at all. And so I'm almost to that apex of the game.
Oh, that's awesome. So Link's Awakening was one of the first games my son watched me play. He absolutely loved it. He was obsessed with it. I got that game, Echoes of Wisdom, release day. Both my kids bounced off it. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, that's the part about being a parent. You can just have these best laid plans. And you know how that goes. I think at some point my daughter will get into it. She played the Princess Peach game for about probably 250 hours at least when she gets mm-hmm. a little older. But I'm probably going to start playing it in front of them. And then maybe they'll start to get interested. My son is obsessed with Roblox right now. And I played with him this morning. I actually play a little Roblox with him. I'm such a noob. I am like, you know, it's like, I was saying that to him. I was like, your dad's a noob, buddy. I'm sorry. It's just, I've been playing video games for 40 something years. I'm a noob at this. But he rolled with me, and Stella's been playing the Kirby's Forgotten Land, the newest Kirby game, which is really pretty good. Fine. I'm playing Rebirth, finally getting into Rebirth. Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah.
At first, it's interesting. And I'll just sort of lay it out there for you. It's so hard to talk about Final Fantasy on social media. It just is. I don't know why. It's just bonkers, but probably doesn't help that when I get frustrated, like I'll post about being frustrated. I get it. But so Remake was kind of a disappointment for me. It was a well-made game that was kind of less than the sum of its parts for me. It really never captured my imagination. I never really got into it. I kind of wished the game would just step back and let me play. There was a lot of things. I saw it through. I mean, it wasn't bad. Like the pieces of it, you watch mm-hmm. the clips of it, and you're like, damn, that's good. But it just didn't really build to something. Like when I play the Trails in the Sky games, those build to something mm-hmm. at the end that's a big bang. And then it goes on to the next one. And that's why people love that series. Remake didn't do that for me. So when I started Rebirth, it was kind of the same. And I was like, I'm going to give this like 5 hours. Because I always will give Final Fantasy a fair hearing. I've really gotten into it. Like once I figured out how some of the controls work, I play games blind. So I go mm-hmm. in and I'm like, I just figured out how to set up the combat settings. Because you can set up hotkeys for the moves that you want to use. So actually in terms of a fighting game, it's really pretty good. It's definitely better than Type Zero, where you had a fixed menu. And this one, you can customize what you want to do. And being Tifa and Barret is pretty fantastic. And knowing that I'm going to get to be Yuffie, who's one of my favorites of all time.
Yes.
Kind of getting excited about that. And I love Yuffie because she's kind of part Shadow and she's part Locke. She's a little bit of both.
I like her. She is very fun to play in Rebirth, and I don't disagree with you on Remake. It felt like I was playing a movie just to get through the movie. And then Rebirth, I'm one of those, I like to complete side quests while I'm in the location, if I Same. Can. Same. And it became extremely taxing. Rebirth is the first game where I got, I got up to Nanaki's territory, and then I was like, I'm done. I'm not doing side quests. I'm so tired of these side quests.
Yeah.
I got burnt out through it. I think because Remake got some praise, but like you said, it didn't build to anything because it's only the first third of the entire game as a whole. So it doesn't feel complete at all. And then they tried to overcorrect. They ended up overcorrecting with Rebirth. So is my feelings on it, which is probably controversial, but at the same time, having played the original, I felt like it flowed a bit better. I do like that they're giving more in-depth background and they give more character building opportunities. Like, I loved all the little extra side quests and extra stuff that you got to see Aerith went in. It makes her story so much more of a heart tug than it was initially. Like, it was still sad what happened with her, but it in the original, but there's a lot of ambiguity in Rebirth and remake that wasn't in the first game. And I'll see where it goes. I'm not going to give a full final opinion until then, but as of right now, I still think 10 and 16 are higher up on my favorite scale at the moment.
Good to know. Nine is my all-time favorite. 10 is right there. 16 was the best in a long time. And a lot of it reminded me of Persona 4. I could go down the big long list, but it did. The NPCs in 16 were really good. They surprised me. The part where he fights his shadow, the part at the end where all of his friends are cheering him. There was a lot of little Persona seasoning in there, which I thought it was the best one I've played in quite a while. I didn't love it. There were things about it that held it back a little bit, but I'd say overall, I was like, this was pretty darn good. I was worried about the side quests too. The side quests are what usually frustrates me. I'm having fun walking around, and then suddenly some side quest comes up that's just like incredibly frustrating. And it's like I'm at a point in my life where my capacity for pointless frustration is not as high as it's been at other points in my life. So it's sort of like knowing to just walk away because I'm a completionist. Usually I'm completionist and I'm like, okay, all right, we're here to have fun. I'm going to walk away. And when I get a chance to end on a high note, like I take it. I like beat Fort Condor this morning and I was like, I am taking, and my son watched me and he got into it. Like he was, because he likes tower defense games. Like, he got into it. So when I beat it, I was like, okay, we're ending on a high note. And I'm trying to sort of teach him, try to end on a high note when you're gaming, if you can, because boy, it just kind of makes my day when we do that, I'll tell you. And then the one other thing I wanted to ask you about, I saw that you're reading a book called The Twisted Ones. What's that like?
Oh yeah. So I finished it. That was interesting. It is Appalachian folklore, and the book it pulls from, so it's inspired by Arthur Machen's The White Ones. And so when you read that, it's from early 1900s. We're talking, I want to say it was published in 1908 or 1912. So a lot of this inspired Lovecraftian lore, this author that, you know, in basically inspired the Twisted Ones book. It's fey folklore, basically. This girl finds sort of a hidden pathway in the woods, but it's not always there. So you have sort of the Irish Celtic folk Gaelic folklore involved in it. And so in The Twisted Ones, it is a wonderful merger of that part of history of the Appalachians, where it was refuge for immigrants of Scottish, Gaelic, Irish traditions. They went out, lived out there, And so their lore merged with Native American lore to kind of create the Appalachian folklore horror that is the Twisted Ones. And so this main character, her grandmother was quite the piece of work, not exactly the most friendly person, but her step grandfather, Cotgrave, she loved him very, very much. And so she goes and she finds his transcripts. And he's talking about the Twisted Ones. And I laid on the ground like the Twisted Ones. And I twisted myself about like the Twisted Ones. And so she gets a little creeped out by it, and like rightfully so. And then she follows her, takes her dog for a walk as she's cleaning out grandmother's house. You know, you need a break for your sanity on stuff like that. Her grandmother was a hoarder. And they go out into the woods, and then they fall into sort of that fae trap of going down a rabbit hole that takes you to another world. So it was an interesting story because you have the Appalachian folklore horror as the main focus.
Yeah.
But in the background focus is dealing with family that treats you terribly. And kind of recovering from that and how you separate the negativity of what they had with the positive memories that you had with the other people that shared their lives with that person.
So it sounds like you'd recommend it.
I would. I enjoy T. Kingfisher a lot. That's just the pen name. The writer is actually Ursula Vernon. And I like her work quite a bit so far. I have not been let down by anything I've read. She also did a retelling of the Fall of House of Usher.
Oh, that's a good one.
Was pretty fun too.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this, but there's a 80s horror writer named Robert McCammon, who was pretty good. He's like, all of his books were optioned for movies, but never got made into them. And he did a book called Usher's Passing, which was the Usher family in the 20th century. I sort of imagine them as the Bluths from Arrested Development. They were a very yes. rich family in a big house that was kind of haunted. And there was weird stuff happening around it. If you can find Usher's Passing, if you like House of Usher, you would. The main character is like the black sheep of the family who left. And he goes back and he's got like a brother who's like Job Bluth, and he's got a sister who's kind of like Lindsay. And, you know, it's like, it really was a lot like the Bluths, and his mother was like the mother from that. And it was a good story. I haven't read that in a long time. The one I'm reading now is called This Is Happiness. And that one is a really incredibly well-written book. It's about a small town in Ireland about 100 years ago when it finally gets electricity.
Ooh.
It's the story of when electricity came to this tiny town in Ireland that had always been the same since forever. And it's just sort of filled with little witticisms about life. I sometimes will quote passages from it on Blue Sky because it's just so well written and so dead on that it's been a really enjoyable read. I wanted to say one more thing too. We have the same Tifa. I saw your Tifa action
up there.
Figure.
Yes.
Yep. I have that one as well. I have the Play Arts one from Advent Children too. That was one of the last action figures I got. Oh, I got the nice Tifa, like before they got so expensive that normal people really, I don't know how they managed to buy them, but I have a few Tifas. People always get surprised by that I'm a Tifa. I'm like a quiet Tifa fan. Like I'm a big fan, but like I don't know. There's like people who make loving Tifa kind of a huge part of their persona. I'm more of like, I think she's amazing and I love her in Rebirth. And also Barrett. Like, I love Barrett. Like, I was telling my son about Barrett this morning about how he acts like this big tough guy who's like obsessed.
But he's the softest out of all of them.
In the original, well, I mean, he reconnects with what's most important. He realizes there are things more important in life than his revenge. That's what I love about that, is that not only does he do that, but he also sort of is not what he appears to be at first. And
there's that. Yeah, and I love that they really kind of expanded on him as a person in the rebirth and remake portions. You know, remake felt very standard Barrett, but you get to, the side quest, you really get to see so much more of him, especially in his hometown, and you see kind of why he's so hard on himself, too, and it just gives such a deeper feel for it.
I can't wait to see that, because he has always been one of my favorite characters. And I like that part in Rebirth when they were going through the tunnels and they sort of started becoming a team, which is like, why didn't you give us that in Remake? It's like, but it, like at the beginning of Rebirth, you see them start to become a team. Like Cloud sort of drops the tough guy merc act of, you need to give me money every time I do something. And they sort of, you see them become a team. I want to give you one last thing, and then we'll wrap up. This has been fantastic. You can make a trilogy out of one piece of source material. It can be done successfully. I mean, many examples, but my favorite is the Hobbit movies, which,
yes,
not great cinema by any stretch of the imagination, but if you watch the first Hobbit movie, it tells a story. It tells the story of how Bilbo earns everyone's respect. He goes from a fish out of water, where basically the group is calling him out. I mean, the best scene in that whole movie is when he returns and Thorin confronts him. Like, you know, are you part of this expedition or not? Like, basically. And it's an amazing scene that made that movie successful, that it told a story. It took you somewhere. And like when Rebirth, that's when I started to like Rebirth, was when I saw them start to become a team. Where they were more, in Remake, they were kind of all still in their lanes. Most. And in the beginning of Rebirth, they start to become a group. And I'm like, okay, I like this. This is cool and interesting. And I love that there's going to be more of Barrett. Because, yeah, he's, when I make those top 10 lists, he's always in there. And I'll be really interested to see. And I think the, you know, all the other components with it are really great. Like, everything was well made about it. It just kind of was... It didn't come alive for me the same way that Rebirth kind of is.
Yeah, and I agree on that. I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people just keep it to themselves in the community because there's so many diehards. No, it's, you know, the golden apple all the way through.
Yeah.
And they forget that sometimes there's stems and leaves involved.
It's true. And I think I wrote about that about a year ago. There are people who don't like the series for whatever reason, and they won't miss an opportunity to bang on it. Like, you know, this game wasn't life-changing for me. It sucks. Like, I'm just always like, man, come on. There's never been a bad mainline Final Fantasy. There's definitely some that work better than others. I'm going to talk about it because I've loved this series for, God, like, what, 40 years? So I'm going to talk about it. Hopefully everyone can handle it. But like, you know what I mean? It's like, I can handle it if you can, but you're right. It becomes difficult, but I'm glad that I'm enjoying Rebirth. I took a long time to play it, and now I'm playing it and enjoying it. And I was like, this is a kind of unexpected surprise, and I'm here for it. And was there anything else you wanted to add today?
Not much other than, like, the main reason Tifa is one of my favorites, it's her background, her character arc. She is a character that has had so much trauma. You know, she finds her best friend from childhood, and, like, they didn't have a perfect relationship. Kids never do. But she reunites with him, and he's different. There's something off. She can't quite place what it is.
Yeah.
She's lost her dad. Mom's not around either. So she loses everyone, and she still chooses to be the kindness around. She tries, she's not quite as bubbly about it like Aerith is, but she tries to always choose kindness for everyone. She is the mom friend of the group. You know, Aerith is the friend that is always pulling people out of their shells and getting them to show their true selves. And I love that about her.
Yeah.
But Tifa takes everyone at face value. She looks at you. You're having a rough day. Here, have a drink. Like, I understand that it, I can see you've had a rough day.
Yeah.
Or, you know, with Barrett, she sees the soft side of him all the time. She sees how he is with Marlene, and she loves Marlene just as much as if she was, Marlene was her own. And just that is a thing to strive to be.
Yeah.
You know, is she perfect? No, every human has their flaws. But it's, that's a good goal to strive to be.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny. I've heard the ungenerous readings of things just drive me nuts. And it's like, maybe it's because I was an English major and I like look at and I try to dig into media and sort of come away with what was going on there. The ungenerous readings of Tifa in the first game, that she was being manipulative of Cloud.
Yeah.
Like when it's like, come on. It's like, what in your life made you that cynical? It's pretty obvious that there's a lot she's leaving unsaid, but she's not insincere in the least.
Like, she's not insincere. She's very self-conscious during remake. Like, you can tell she's not sure how to reestablish the friendship. You can tell things have been broken, but she wants to. She's just very unsure of how to go about it because she can tell Cloud's been through some stuff. He's not who he used to be. And so I take it more of she's treading carefully so that she can include him but not hurt him in the process is how I read it.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think she was manipulating him. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the other thing that was dramatically different in remake was just I felt like Aerith was very different for me in remake because, and probably she's the same in the original, but just how confident she is. I found her confidence very attractive. Like, yes. I'm not really a big Final Fantasy VII shipper, but her most attractive quality to me was how confident she is, that if she sees something she wants, she goes for it.
There's and she's a counterbalance to Tifa in many ways, you know. Aerith is very extroverted, and you'd think for Tifa being a bartender, she would be extroverted too, but she's very introverted if you pay attention to how she holds herself, how she interacts with people. She's very introverted, and so she's the yin to the yang. Like, they're together, they make something so perfect, and that's my favorite thing about Rebirth is it establishes their shared friendship. It shows that they've always been friends together, and so many in the community try to make them enemies because of some love triangle that really isn't there. You can love people on a platonic or a romantic level for many different things, and they have best sister energy together because Aerith brings out the confidence in everyone with her own confidence.
Yeah, I completely agree. That was one of the things that really worked for me, even in remake, was that it was no shadow of a doubt that they were friends that were rooting for each other. That was not ambiguous in the least. That's right out there, and I loved that. And I was like, warring fandoms, pay attention to your heroes in this instance.
Exactly.
Do as they do.
And I think that view of the relationship is why me and Amy get along so well, because she's very Aerith. She loves Aerith. And she helped me see some things in Aerith that I hadn't seen in the first game. And I do think that the remake and Rebirth have really helped Aerith show her full potential.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that her full potential wasn't on display in the first game, but you had to choose to make her full potential on display when you played the original.
Yeah.
You don't get the option to not see her full potential in the remakes, in my opinion. You get to see her on full display, and you end up loving her as much as the rest of the crew. And she displays a level of patience with people that is very interesting. Like, she has this very go-get-em, very extroverted she's determined, and I love that. But she finds ways to do it in a way that isn't hurtful.
Yeah.
You know, people can get taken away with that extroversion and to where it can be hurtful to people who maybe don't have that level of confidence.
Yeah, that's a really good observation. Well, I think that's about all the time we have today for Amazing Gamers. Allie, you've been an amazing guest, and I am so glad that we were finally able to do this. Thank you again for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It was good to see you.